do we just need to move with the times and accept that outside of the world of bike racing, the MTBs will be the future for the majority of riders?
I don't doubt that, especially as a new rider. Why wouldn't you? It's going to be hard to say, oh, you can buy this that goes this fast and is really hard to use, or you can buy this that lets you get twice as far in half the amount of time.
How are you?
Doing well. I'm just stressing, packing everything up, trying to get everything sorted for Europe.
I'm going to have the same problems. My dog's not been out for a walk this afternoon.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got a collie as well, haven't you?
Two of them, yeah.
Two, okay.
One's at my girlfriend, with my girlfriend right now at work, and one, the younger one's here because he's a handful.
Yes.
You have one as well.
Yes, my 3-year-old is quite a handful as well.
Yeah. They're the greatest dogs, but they are a handful.
Anyway, back on the pod, start to think that you might have got a thing for e-bikes after all.
I knew that was going to cause some commotion.
We'll get on to that. Did you go to see Otter or not?
I didn't. No, I've been up in BC since recon, basically.
From what I saw, there's a lot of gold forks flying around.
Yeah, I don't know where they all came from. It's hard for us to get them.
They won't have any left to sell.
No, that's the problem, I think.
Anything that you saw, like from the coverage, like media coverage, that was of interest? Any sort of rear linkage designs or new frames?
Nothing really. I mean, it's funny. Every time I see a new linkage design, I'm kind of like, oh God, here we go again.
Yeah, just take the Saracen route and just do a single pivot.
Yeah. Just keep make it work.
The overcomplications of frames, I mean, that's a bigger conversation, but it is kind of mad that we've still got people running, you know, single pivot setups, and then others with these crazy rear ends. I mean, it makes you think, have we gone too far?
Yeah, it does make you think. I mean, people are riding everything from a 1-bar to a 6-bar.
Yeah.
And everything in between, you know, there's got to be something. And there is no common denominator of this bike works well and this bike doesn't. Like, there's plenty of single pivot bikes that work great, and there's plenty of 6-bar bikes that work terrible. Yeah. So obviously it's not the linkage design.
Is this the most common question that you get asked about linkage designs?
I think it's probably up there, yeah. It's up there with the should I run an air or a coil.
Yeah.
Can't beat that one to death anymore.
We'll stay off that one. Anyway, I thought we'd have a quick chat to preview Fort William World Cup. And then afterwards we will address some of the feedback from our previous chats on e-bikes.
Can't wait.
We don't have to. It might be quite painful. So you're flying over this weekend for Fort William. Are you over in Europe all the way until July?
Yeah, till July for sure.
What do you do between the race weekends?
It's a struggle. You really can't plan a whole lot because I'll try to figure out what the majority of the teams are doing, because most of them will have some type of camp in between races. And I'll try to head to wherever they're staying just to keep that chain of communication open. You try to help where you can. Mm. It won't be a real test session, but I'll be around to help if I can.
And as well as the downhill, are you going to the separate enduro events as well?
I'll go to some of them, but not all of them. I think I missed the first one in Poland, but then obviously Leo Gang is joined. And then there's a few others that I'll manage to get to.
Is there quite a different vibe at those other events, the enduro events? Is it a bit quieter, not as much
like
going on?
Like the separate enduro events?
Yeah.
Yeah, most of them are pretty weird. I don't know. I just feel like they're just kind of getting pushed to the side for the most part. I mean, enduro without a festival or like a common ground like Finale or something like that just doesn't have a whole lot to offer, because guys are just gone the entire time. So I don't know. The one at Leo Gang last year was just a shame. There was nobody there. I would have been so bummed to be a rider getting treated like a second class citizen, or be a team that's spending money to, I mean, basically it's a marketing event, no matter how you slice it, and you're stuffed out in some construction zone with cement trucks driving back and forth. It was a real shame.
I posed this question to Rob Williams, one of the EWF riders. he had a lot of criticisms of the format as it is now. One of the questions I asked him was, did he feel like there could be a way that there could be a special stage that was incorporated into the hillside where the World Cup, where the downhill World Cup happens? I don't know if there's another way to make that format more watchable.
Yeah, that's tricky. I mean, they did try to do that in Leogang, but they mistimed everything so bad that people were finishing at 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Wow, I didn't know
so
that.
So it's like, nobody's going to be there.
Wow.
So yeah. I do think it could be done. And there are events such as Finale where there are crowds. People have time to get out there. But also, like, that's a destination and people are already there. So they go for a ride and they watch the Enduro. That works. It's just a different type of planning.
Okay, so first race of the season, Fort William. It's a long track, potential for changing conditions. There's fatigue, I'm sure, that will play a part for some of the riders earlier this season. Tell me about this particular track and also the difficulties that the riders might have in finding the best balance with a suspension setup.
Yeah, Fort William's a tough one. It's not incredibly difficult, but I think that's what makes it difficult. The gains are so hard to come by, and one small mistake causes you to lose a K an hour, and that's a massive amount of time by the time you're at the bottom. You're not going to gain that back. So setup is critical. I think Fort William is tricky because it is so flat, and most of the impacts that are coming, especially rear wheel impacts, are coming directly into the bike because you're still centered right over that bike.
Yeah.
So it's tricky to balance a fast bike, which you want kind of firm, with a bike that's going to absorb those impacts that you get from random rocks, random things moving in the track, or just mistiming something and hitting it.
And then it might rain.
And then it might rain or snow or who knows what it could do. I mean, May, from what I've heard from our guys, is that May can be quite nice there.
Yeah.
But again, you just don't know.
Have the midges arrived? That's the question.
I sure hope not. That's always the thing there is, if the weather's shit, you're okay, but you're miserable. If it's nice, then the midges come out and you're miserable. So
it's a nightmare, isn't it? I mean, yeah. For you down in the pits, it's maybe not quite so bad, but it's not good, is it?
It's not terrible. We haven't had it so bad. I think one year we were pushed over kind of where the ropes course is, like normally where Syndicate is, and all the midges were coming out of the woods there, and that was miserable. But in general, we're okay.
I hope that there's a bit of wind for you, basically. That'll be the answer.
That'd be nice.
So I'm sure a lot of the riders will be running the new dampers. Feels like there's even more potential for fine-tuning now with all those added valves. Are you expecting to have a busier season because of that?
I don't know yet. There are definitely a lot of things that we can try. But what I'm hoping is that after a couple of races, we'll have a really good idea of exactly where we want to be. Yeah. And I think that we're in a far better place as far as damper performance goes. So I'm kind of hoping that that takes the rider's focus off of that and onto something else.
Yeah.
So we're not just constantly working on stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you said to me like previously with the new Grip X2, it's a lot easier to get right and a lot more difficult to get wrong.
Yeah.
Does the same apply with the elite racers, do you think?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Because okay, you still, just like any other group of riders, there's people that want to fiddle with things constantly and there's people that want to set it and then just ride. So it's really no different than your normal group of friends that go riding. There's always somebody that's constantly changing everything.
Yeah.
And there's somebody that hasn't changed anything since he bought the bike.
We all know those yeah, people.
And honestly, the riders aren't that different. You'll get the guy who wants to change everything all the time, and you'll get the guy that is going to set it up, get it pretty close, and then learn to ride it.
I've actually noticed that from riding out on the West Coast and then bringing the forks back to the UK and riding in pretty slushy conditions, like I am now playing around with it a lot more.
I bet.
And also the temperature, that's another thing that I think I'm noticing. Like it feels like it's more sensitive to big temperature changes.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I did feel like I was having to, you know, put some more air in, play around with the high speed a little bit more.
Yeah, I honestly don't know yet. I left Recon with you and came to BC, and it was still cold, snowing really, but also that the terrain here is so different that you're just introducing too many variables at once. But it is absolutely true that, and I think Santa Cruz is also an outlier, like setting something up there, especially once you get to know the trails and then going somewhere else.
Yeah,
it's not very conducive to a good setup.
Not at all. I mean, I was running quite a firm setup down in Santa Cruz, and I brought that back here and it felt horrible. I thought, now what do I do?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what feedback you get from the racers, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm excited and a little bit nervous just to see what's going to happen.
What can you do in terms of adjusting the size of the shims or the valves? Do you do that during the race weekend?
We might, but there's just not much time. And if there's a glaring issue, then yes, we'll change something. But if you change something and the rider doesn't like it and you have to change it back, that's a day of practice.
Yeah.
And if you only have 2 days of practice, that's not good.
Yeah.
So what you really want to do is gather a bunch of information as much as you can. And unless there's a big issue, like I can't ride this, you're probably going to do as much as you can without doing a retune.
Sure. Yeah.
And as if that story lines up again or with other riders, then you're going to look into making the change and you'll have stuff ready for the next race.
I'm really intrigued to see how the female riders and also the lighter riders get on with these new forks. I think they're really going to notice the difference.
I think it's going to be huge. Yeah.
Right. That's World Cup. Should we talk about our previous conversation about
e-bikes? Yeah, go for it.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've taken heat so many times. It's fine.
Okay, so like for the people watching or listening, we spoke previously during my visit to Scotts Valley. I'll put the link to that conversation at the end of this chat. We certainly got the keyboard warriors going. so I'll go with the first one from DIT4963. What a stupid take on e-bikes and on mountain bikes in general, facepalm. I think the most stupid I've ever heard.
That's a good one. I'm not quite sure how to respond to that one.
No, we'll leave that. From Spot BA, if we didn't have e-bikers at UC, who would provide endless mediocre GoPro vids? I think I actually contributed to that during my stay, so apologies for that.
But, well, I mean, by you contributing to it, that basically means that Fox enabled you to do that, so it's still our fault.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, this does raise an interesting point, and I obviously rode the campus trails whilst I was out there, and like I completely understand why people aren't happy with more traffic on trails like that in particular. And I think the main reason is because they're dug by hand, they're made of clay, and when you get ruts on those sort of trails, they don't disappear when it rains like they might here in the UK. So I think they're quite location specific, your opinions. Would you agree with that?
My opinions are incredibly local specific and built by my interactions with people. And not to mention that a lot of the stuff our area is illegal, which means that you can't have regular trail maintenance. It's not designed for traffic. Which, you know, that's a failure of the industry as a whole, and we're working with a finite resource. It's not so different than surfing, right? You only have so many places that you can actually do this.
Mm.
So when you just introduce more people without figuring out where you're going to put them, you're just gearing up for conflict.
Okay, so there's a question. So if you were a surfboard manufacturer, surely you would want more people on the waves. But if you're the person that's also surfing, has been doing it for years, you might think a bit differently. You're kind of caught in the middle there, I would say.
For sure. Absolutely. Like my job is funded by people buying bikes. But I also see them being treated in an incredibly irresponsible way. And I see the issues that it presents. So it's like there needs to be a plan for where these people are going to go, because I think I said it last time, mountain biking is hard. People get hurt.
Yeah.
And without a proper area to progress or learn, or even people teaching you, you're going to introduce more issues.
Okay. Another comment from Toximaniac. According to Geordie's logic, all riders have to earn their turns, but shuttling or chairlifts are okay. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I think shuttling is 50-50, right? There's plenty of people that try to shuttle where we are or other areas that I've been to that are highly personalized. I mean, Bellingham gets a ton of shuttlers as well. There's stuff in northern California. And I think, again, if we break this down into locations and you talk about where we are, shuttling has caused enormous issues.
Sure.
With locals, people shuttling on narrow roads, doing U-turns, you know, just kind of disrespectful behavior. Chairlifts, I have no problem with. It's not really my thing all the time. I've done it every once in a while. I enjoy it, but it's like, that's a bike park.
Yeah.
There's people being paid to work on trails and to fix stuff. There's medics around. There's a support structure for the most part.
Those sort of trails are generally designed for high traffic as well.
You would think. I mean, there's places like Morzine where there's off-piste stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
And I think that's just natural. But in general, that stuff is designed for a bunch of people to ride it.
I agree. I mean, I think during drawing comparisons to chairlifts, I think it's a bit of a cop out when e-bikes versus chairlifts, etc. Shuttling, I do think, is a little bit. It's like, hang on, if you're not okay with e-bikes, then you should not be okay with shuttling as well.
I personally am not a fan of shuttling. I would rather pedal my bike than sit in a vehicle.
Yeah.
We just did a shuttle trip here, and it was like, I don't know, 45 minutes up a pretty miserable rocky road. And this is a legal area, legal trails built by a crew. And I honestly probably would have rather pedaled it and done one lap. It's not my thing. But I think I would rather see people pedaling e-bikes up the trail than a car full of bikes driving up the trail.
That's fair.
I mean, I'm still figuring all this stuff out too.
Okay.
But I'd say one week, I might change my mind in a month.
Well, we'll get on to that. I've got three comments here. They're all kind of along the same lines. I'm going to do them all together, and then we'll talk back on them. So, Joker MTB, who I've noticed is quite funny actually, he's commenting on a lot of my videos. Geordie reminds me of a telemark skier yelling at resort skiers for getting in his way as he ratchets his way to the top of the hill for a single run of the day.
Fair, I think, except that. Man, that's a hard parallel because I am riding a modern enduro bike.
Yes.
I mean, it's 36 pounds, downhill tires, O-chain. It is 100% designed for gravity. It's close, but not totally accurate.
Quaker Zor said, he sounds like a bitter old man not getting with the times.
Again, it's like, yes, I am a bitter old man, 100%. But I'm also not riding an aggressive hardtail or a rigid bike with V-brakes.
Yeah.
I am completely in the times and riding the most modern bike possible. So
parallels
aren't exactly accurate.
Billy Farwig says, I bet Geordie's take on e-bikes will change when he gets older and needs a new knee or hip. That'll change his tune. An e-bike was the best thing I ever bought, and I swapped out to a Fox 38 and a coil. Game changer.
Maybe. I don't know. Again, I struggle with, I think, with my lifestyle of traveling 200 days a year or something, that time I get to spend quietly pedaling along and suffering is really important to me, and I enjoy from the beginning to the end. I'm not getting somewhere just to do this one part. For the most part, I enjoy all of it. And then I don't know if there's something that prevents me from pedaling, but I'd still be okay getting stuck out in the backcountry. then yeah, totally. I'd ride an e-bike. Like I ride motos quite a bit, and I don't know, if one of those things breaks down in the backcountry, you're kind of screwed too. So yeah. It's not that different, but I haven't gotten to that point yet.
If we were talking again in say 5 years time and you'd finally caved in, come over to the dark side, what do you think would need to have changed in the world of e-bikes for that to happen? Lighter bikes maybe, or
I don't think the weight thing is such an issue. For me, the times that I've ridden them, I've been pretty annoyed at battery life and charging. I think if I ride something like that, I want to go out for a big ride and I want it to be full power. Like sure. that was what was fun, was climbing really tech stuff that there was no way I could do on a normal bike.
Oh yeah.
And at full power, I don't know. I was getting a couple hours maybe of really steep, hard climbing.
Do you know another thing I've realized recently? I've just thrown a set of Michelin E-Wilds onto the Levo that I've got, and they're really knobbly tires and they make technical climbing really enjoyable. Like you can get up stuff that I've never been able to get up before. And that's another thing, like with the e-bike, it allows you to ride downhill casing tires basically and big tread. You can then really push things a lot harder, I find, both up and down. There's another benefit.
No, absolutely. But again, it's like the more weight you put on it, the less battery life you get.
Yeah.
You might not notice it. It's not as glaring as getting on a bike with exo tires and then putting downhill tires on it.
Yeah.
But it's still a drawback.
We haven't really got to the bottom of what could tempt you over. But I guess, like, okay, battery life, that could be one thing.
I think bikes in general are incredibly finicky. They don't last that long before you need to start working on them. And I think the early years of e-bikes were definitely not great. They are, from what I know, they are getting quite a bit better as far as motor life and battery life, things like that. But still, to have one e-bike as your only bike, I don't think I could do that.
I think that's fair. And also the point that you made about being on the road for so much of the year and wanting to sort of use your e-bike your mountain bike to keep fit, I can sympathize with that. Like I've spent a good part of my life on the road, and it's definitely important to get those miles in when you get the opportunity.
Yeah. And not to mention that for me, traveling with an e-bike just isn't logistically feasible. I'd have to organize a battery pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, good point.
Once we figure that stuff out, it should be a whole lot easier.
Lucas M says, preach, fist bump.
For all the hate, I did get quite a few people and quite a lot of industry people saying, man, I'm glad you said it.
Well, Sleeper 20 Valve says, all hail the gatekeeper. So you are the gatekeeper, it seems. Oh yeah, a few mentioned that. And then Deggers said, 100% correct, e-bikes aren't bikes, they are motorbikes.
I mean, they are. There's no way of arguing that it's a bike with a motor on it. It is not a motorcycle. There's like, you can't lump them in with off-road motos.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like right now the line is so blurry. It's just a blotch where you go from one wheels to e-bikes to the small like Segway Suron things. And now there's this whole thing in between of quite high powered, you know, 70-80 km/h unlicensed motos.
Mm.
And they're starting to pop up in a lot of places.
Aren't they just? Do you know what? When a video of mine does quite well, when it gets a lot of traction, it reaches outside of the world of e-bikes and outside of the world of mountain bikes, and you get the Suron riders and then you get the motocross riders.
Yep.
And generally they're all saying, why would you spend $5,000 on an e-bike when you can buy a Honda whatever for X amount of money?
Again, it's not the same.
Yeah.
We do get that whole like, why is a moto 7K and an e-bike's 10K? But it's a very uneducated question, because if you look at those things And even if you look at an automobile, they're absolute garbage. Everything made on them is the cheapest possible thing you could get. They do kind of last, but it's a very different, it's just, there's no way to draw those parallels. I mean, if you want to pick e-bikes or whatever, you're basically buying the best possible version that you could get, right? You're buying a fork that people are winning World Cups on. You're buying pretty decent carbon technology. The amount of effort that goes into building one of these things is so much more than the effort that goes into building a motocross bike.
I think a lot of these things come down to volume as well. When it comes to motorbikes, sure, or cars, for example, like that price comes down once they're building them in the hundreds of thousands.
It does, absolutely. But I mean, you just look at brakes on an off-road motorcycle.
Yeah.
And they're just these big hunks of crap.
Yeah.
There's nothing special there. You look at a mountain bike brake and they're phenomenal. Like the machining tolerances are 10 times what they are on most other vehicles. It's just really hard to make something small and light and functional.
Well, I mean, I learned a lot about that during my time at Fox Factory, because I mean, just seeing those sort of minute details, the micro engineering that goes into manufacturing the internals of a fork. I mean, there's not a lot of space there to fit in an awful lot of technology.
There isn't.
I mean, you mentioned cars, and I wrote that down here. Cars are going electric. The next Porsche Boxster will be electric. We've seen the final combustion engine Audi RS6, Ford Mustang's now electric.
Yep.
So do we just need to move with the times and accept that outside of the world of bike racing, the MTBs will be the future for the majority of riders?
I don't doubt that. I think that why, especially as a new rider, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to say, oh, you can buy this that goes this fast and is really hard to use, or you can buy this that lets you get twice as far in half the amount of time. And does it bum me out? Yeah, a little bit, because it isn't the same thing. But also, I'm not a complete curmudgeon. Like, I think there's going to come a time and a place where you'll probably see far more e-bikes than pedal bikes, and engineering resources are going to be put into e-bike stuff.
We've said this already, and I mean, this debate will no doubt continue for years to come, but one thing that's hard to deny is that e-bikes are now what is sustaining a lot of companies in a really tough time in the industry. So is it not just something that we all need to get behind?
Yes. I think we do all need to get behind it, if only not to throw more junk on the market.
Okay.
And I think we're as guilty as anyone. Like, you make stuff that doesn't work every once in a while. But if you don't put time and effort into building something, you're going to build something that isn't really worth making.
Sure.
And you're just going to get more crap in the landfill, more batteries that are not able to recycle, more motors that are just scrap. So, man, if you're going to do it right.
Yeah. And that's one big issue that I've got with it right now. Like, after 2 years, your warranty is done when it comes to the motor and the battery. And if you need to replace that, you're paying big money. And
huge.
I think... The responsibility is on these motor system manufacturers to create something that's more serviceable, just like a motorbike, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe you will see that. But that kind of goes back to this whole every 2 years, the bike has to be reinvented. And nobody's going to buy an aftermarket battery or motor system for a 2-year-old mountain bike because somebody said that this next one's got better kinematics or the flex is tuned better. Whereas if we just start to figure this stuff out and make these bikes last 4, 5, 6 years, yes, I know plenty of people ride 6-year-old bikes, but
yeah,
for the most part, most riders are replacing a bike every couple of years, I would think.
Sure.
Most. I don't know if that's accurate either, but at least at the sharp end of things, people are replacing things quite regularly.
I'm going to be in the Alps this summer. I'm going out for 3 months, staying near Morzine. And
oh, cool.
I've still yet to decide on what bike I'm going to bring out with me. I'm also tempted to try and run a lightweight e-bike just to see if I can do a season on that, and then maybe explore higher on some enduro trails as well.
It's so funny that you have to make that choice. Like, there has to be a way to make those bikes work no matter what.
Sure.
Like, if you could take an e-bike and the motor dies and it's just a normal bike, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
But it's not.
It's not. I mean, there are some manufacturers out there that are trying to sell the idea of their bikes like that. Like, I think Norco's new lightweight, they're saying, oh, you know, run it without the battery.
Okay. Probably not right now. Not yet.
No, I agree. But yeah, I'm leaning towards a big hitting enduro bike, although I still think that for the longevity of my body and also the bike itself, that it might require a downhill bike for the season.
Man, yeah, I mean, that stuff, Portes du Soleil gets, Euro bike parks are different than people that have gone to Whistler.
Sure.
If nobody's experienced both, you go to Whistler and you're like, wow, this is a bike park? That's amazing. And then you go to Leogang at the end of the year and like, oof, this is awful.
Yeah, braking bumps and like, yeah. your arms are falling off within about 2 days of riding there.
Yeah, that's a tough call.
What would you
take? I don't think I'd want to only have a downhill bike because you miss so many of those high alpine traverses and things like that. But
yeah, and we want to travel over to Switzerland as well and do a bit of riding over there and do some of the, so like you say, the high altitude stuff. So yeah, maybe it's two bikes.
Why not?
Or three.
Yeah.
We'll see. Thank you for spending the time to talk to me again, as I'm sure it's pretty hectic before you leave for the UK. Final question. If it's wet at Fort William, can Charlie Hatton take the win again? Or if it's dry, who is your favorite to take the win of the first race of the season?
Oh, I hate these questions.
Got to be done.
It's like most of these people are friends.
Yeah.
And so if I start picking one person, not to mention that I'm a little bit clueless sometimes. I'm so deep into whatever I'm doing. Yeah. I could pick somebody that broke their wrist last week and I wouldn't remember. Yeah. Charlie, 100%. He could win wet or dry, I think. Just if things line up. Obviously, we saw that run in the wet last year. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah. Wasn't it just?
Fort William.
Endurance. I mean, I think it's going to favor those riders that are able to maintain their fitness throughout the off season.
It is. But it's also people that can come into it a little bit more relaxed. If you don't go 100%, but you keep your wits about you and you pick perfect lines, that's another way to carry speed down that track. And there's also a bit of luck. If it's windy, you're done. Or if it's tailwind, you might be good.
Yeah.
There's so many variables that some of them are 100% chance.
I'm not going to get an answer out of you, am I?
Yeah. Who do you pick?
I'm going to get behind Charlie because I don't know how you can bet on anyone else after you saw what he did last year, and he's surely only getting better. I mean, Ronan could stand a chance as well, maybe.
That's the thing. So could Kolb. Like that team could easily fill out the podium. Mm-hmm. Dakota's also quite big and strong. He does run a kind of wacky setup that might not be ideal for Fort William. Benoit's also big, strong, fit guy, and I know he's been training.
Sure.
It'll be interesting to see Valley on that track too.
Yeah.
Historically not the fittest, just the best. So where is that crossover?
I still wouldn't bet against her.
I would never bet against her. I mean, her skills are, there's nobody even close right now.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be good. Do you know what? Last time I was at Fort William, the one thing I didn't like was that I was down in the pits for most of the race day. And like, you miss everything. And
you do.
You just have to be told like what the results were and that's it. You find out later.
Yeah. Wait till you go to Snowshoe if you ever go there. You don't know anything. Because there's no cell service, there's no screens, there's nothing.
It's not quite the experience that people think it is when you're actually there, especially when you're working.
Nope. Yeah.
Have a good trip over.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hopefully we get a chance to speak during the season, because it'd be really interesting to see how people are getting on with these new dampers and, how the season has progressed, I guess. Especially in different climates as well. It'd be interesting to see how you get on.
I'm I don't know yet. I'm interested. Should be good.
Nice one. Okay, thanks again, Jordy. When we say goodbye, don't leave because we need this recording to download at both ends. But
all good.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks for the chat.
Much appreciated.
Cheers.